Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Icons, a podcast brought to you by These Football Times in celebration of our new magazine of the same name. Across our 12 episodes, we'll dive deep into the lives, legacies and magic of football's greatest icons. I'm very pleased to be joined again by one of the TFT team. Welcome, Aidan Williams.
Thank you, Rob. Yes, looking forward to getting into another great player here.
Yeah, a really fantastic player, this one. And again, these episodes could easily run to 2-3 hours just talking about the games, the careers, but we're keeping them short. We're keeping them to the point to fit in without this sort of icon series. So who is this player that you're going to talk to us about this time, Aidan?
We are talking about the king, le roi, Michel Platini, the footballer, not the administrator.
Yeah, let's maybe keep it to the football side for an episode like this. Although we definitely won't be doing icons of the administrators, I don't think, anytime soon. So I think it helps with the footballers. We talked in your first episode about 1950s and 1960s football with Puskás. We're jumping a couple of decades with Platini, but tell us, how has football changed since those early days of the European Cup? Hungary almost winning a World Cup. Where does Platini fit in terms of his development as a player, and where is football as Platini emerges in the early 70s and through into the late 80s?
Yeah, I think the important thing here is where French football is in this time, and it is not really anywhere. There is very little heritage in French football at this time. We think of them now as perennial favourites for World Cups and European Championship. They have incredible depth across the board of talent. That really was not the case in the early mid-70s when Platini came through. They'd done well in the 1958 World Cup. They'd been disappointing in 66, and then there'd been nothing. So really, this was not a powerful footballing nation. This was not a nation for which football was a big thing. Until Platini reached his peak, football was still trailing behind rugby and cycling in particular in French consciousness. And it wasn't until the mid-80s really, or probably early to mid-80s, when he was at his international prime, that football really seeped fully into French consciousness across the board and became a much bigger thing. So for him and his generation as well, but you know, he sat way above the rest of them, really, to come through at this time was going against the grain somewhat. He'd come through at his local club, Nancy, and then went to Saint-Étienne shortly after. And this was at a time through the 70s where French clubs had started to improve, not just where he was, but across the board. And there was some greater inroads in European competition at this point. Saint-Étienne themselves obviously did very well in the European Cup in particular, but never quite to the very peak. But the French football was emerging, and they went to the 1978 World Cup with Platini, again, the young hope at this time, the star who they'd pinned hopes on, but it wasn't hugely successful. They played quite well, but really it was a bit too early for them. They weren't quite ready. They weren't up to the level at that point. And that was their first World Cup for 12 years. They were still very much emergent. So Platini, to then go on and do what he did as we get into the early 1980s, was very much out of the norm for French football. For him to then to go on and become unquestionably Europe's best at that time, and for a brief period of time, the world's best, I think is absolutely incredible. I think in the sort of window between Zico fading from view and Maradona becoming what he became, there was a couple of years period there where Platini was the best in the world. This was a time, though, also where number 10s, there seemed to be quite a proliferation of good number 10s at this point. obviously, you know, I mentioned a couple there. You could throw in the likes of Elkjær into this mix, Francescoli as well. There was a lot of this style of player. But Platini took it another level because he was a number 10 and a number 9 all in one person, which, you know, when it comes to fitting 11 players into a team, if you've got one who contributes as much as two players, which is what he did, that naturally pushes you onto another level. French football being what it was, that wasn't going to be sufficient to fulfill his ambitions and abilities, really. So, you know, Juventus is where he ended up, and that's where his greatest years were. But this is a time equally where pragmatism hadn't fully come in to quite the same extent. Now, Italian football has a little element of that always, but not quite the same then as it became later. Equally, or that it had been before, equally internationally, this was a time where the purity, the idealistic style, that kind of approach that he was perfect for, was still seen as being able to be successful, and he was the ultimate proof that it could be. As that generation faded, and so pragmatism took over, and the likes of Platini, the sort of languid elegance, you could probably see recent comparison. Well, it's not that recent at all, I suppose, now, but someone like Riquelme is probably the closest modern equivalent, but not with quite as much dynamism and prolific goal scoring. So Platini was, you know, several levels above even him. But it's that kind of languid elegance that was something that was more prevalent at this time and then faded. But Platini was, well, he was the best at that, without question.
The thing that always strikes me about Platini is his goal scoring record, as you say. You know, you think about French number 10s, and as a football fan of my era, my generation, I would always think of Zidane. So I automatically think Platini was like Zidane in the sense that he was a creator, who's sort of the central part of the team, which he was. And then you look at his goal scoring record and you think, well, hang on a minute. How was he Zidane and that prolific Papin style number line in terms of numbers? But it's quite phenomenal, isn't it, when you actually look at his goal scoring record, that, as you say, he's doing the work of two players, but it didn't, when you watch him and when you look at his highlights in some of his games, you don't know how he does it, because he's got that kind of vision that those really creative players have. And even the way he wears his shirt and his shorts and his socks down, it's kind of, you've got that kind of South American flair to him. And yet, incredibly accurate finisher, knows where the goal is, knows where to be in the box. And the team just perfectly functions around having him as that figurehead. And obviously he wins those three consecutive Ballon d'Ors, 83, 84, 85. And that, as you say, is he quite aware the best player in the world? And we always talk about Maradona in the 80s, don't we? But actually that first part of the decade, while Maradona was, you know, starting riots on the pitch in the Nou Camp before he sort of excels in 86 and then at Napoli, it really is kind of Platini's decade, isn't it, in the sort of these early years. How was he kind of received in Italy when he went there as a player? Because obviously he's quite different maybe to what some of the Italians would have normally sought from a second striker like Platini, or a more sort of hard-working number nine they would normally have.
Yeah, he was different to the mold, that's for sure. And I guess the first thing for him is he's of Italian heritage, his parents. Italian immigrants into France, and so it was almost a homecoming of sorts. So it was a natural place for him to end up. He actually struggled initially in the Juventus side. This is under Trapattoni. He'd arrived along with Boniek. This was after the 1982 World Cup. It was that summer that he moved to Juventus. Initially struggled, and as did the team. Then he and Boniek prompted a bit of a tactical switch, which Trapattoni was amenable to, because they wanted their roles adjusted. They wanted more freedom, and they wanted a bit more to become, well, Platini in particular, to become the creative focal point through which all of the team's attacks flowed, which was how he worked best. And Trapattoni obviously knew what Platini could do and went along with it and decided, yes, okay, maybe this is the way we need to play now. Maybe we need to focus on building around Platini rather than trying to slot him into our existing structures, which had been successful for Juventus prior to Platini coming. It's not like he'd gone into a team that wasn't doing well. They were a good team. So you can see why he was initially wanted to fit in or was told to fit into the approach, but that wasn't the way to get the best out of him and equally Boniek, I suppose, but mainly Platini. Once he got the freedom to roam and the responsibility to direct the play, he flourished and he could bring the best out of his teammates, but it took him to new heights of excellence as well. So I think once he'd got over that initial harder period, he then became, well, Juventus and Juventus fans and the club and Italian football in general could see that he was on another level to what they had at that point. And yes, you're right, Maradona was soon to take Napoli by storm. At this stage, no, he was struggling in Barcelona. He wasn't on the same level. His reputation was up there, but his play at that point hadn't done anything to match to what Platini was doing at that stage, I guess it is the point. So at this point, if you had to pick the better of the two at that point in time, it was Platini. He, as a midfielder, won the capocannoniere, the top goal scorer in Serie A 3 years in a row as a midfielder. Now, like we say, he's the creative fulcrum of the team. He is the Zidane, as you say, someone else who ended up at Juventus. But he's so much more than that. Zidane scored a fair few, but he was not prolific by any means, whereas Platini was. He put up the numbers that strikers did. He scored in the final phase of that first season. He scored 14 goals in 9 matches in the spring to help Juventus to higher up in the league in a Coppa Italia victory. He scored 20 the next year, I think. This was when Serie A was only a 30-game season, so that's big numbers at that time. So yes, he became very quickly a Juventus legend and hero and one of the finest players, or I guess at that point, the finest player in Italy, only usurped by Maradona once he came along a little bit later and transformed Napoli. But no, very much at this point, it was all Platini. And that 3-year spell when he was top goal scorer in Italy coincided with his 3 Ballon d'Or awards as well.
Yeah, and that when you look at that Juve team, obviously Paolo Rossi was at Juventus as well. And then later on, Michael Laudrup joins Platini. I always find it, and Laudrup's obviously one of our icons in the series. I always find it interesting that you had Laudrup, who was that creative force, that sort of passer who could get a goal. But he was very different to a sort of a Platini-type player. Let's talk about France. So obviously he was, the talisman, the centre of that team. And I remember being told by my dad, son, you need to watch France from the 1980s and watch how real football's played. And I was like, Dad, I've got Middlesbrough in the 1990s. What are you telling me about this team for? But that team is one of the best teams probably produced that's kind of gone out there and won a trophy, that team of Platini. And he was central to everything they did, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I talked about them in the early World Cup. So 82, they were excellent and got to the semi-final and should have got to the final itself. Really, that went a bit wrong in a nightmare in Seville of Harold Schumacher poleaxing Battiston and a 3-1 lead in extra time that disappeared and a penalty shootout loss to West Germany. But that was the first iteration of the Carré Magique, which had Platini as the tip of the diamond, if you like, with Tiganar and Gires there. But the fourth member at that point was Bernard Gengini, who was a very good player. But then 2 years later, by the time of the European Championship in France, he'd been replaced with Luis Fernandez. And I think that was, it just took it up another notch. He had a little more of the defensive discipline and the tigerish play that the others didn't have. And I guess that allowed the rest of them to do what they did best, which was an awful lot of attacking. But you're right, Platini, he was the tip of the diamond. It was essentially a diamond midfield. He was the tip of that diamond behind some ineffective strikers. But what did that matter when Platini was there, able to score as many as he did? And I guess if we're looking at the peak time of his career and the iconic moments, well, the 83-84 season to me anyway is the very best. I know the following season he won a European Cup overshadowed by events, of course, but that I guess from a Juventus perspective took them to something they'd never done before. But the 83-84 season, as he himself said, he set himself three targets at the start of that season. There was the Italian Championship, which he won and did that by being top scorer again with those 20 goals I mentioned. There was the European Cup Winners' Cup with Juventus, which they won. And then there was the European Championship. And that's the one that he himself said would be the hardest, but it was also the one closest to his heart. I think to succeed with France, and especially in the manner that they played. Now, Michel Platini and their coach, Michel Hidalgo, were two peas in the pod, really. Their viewpoint and perspective on how football should be played, the purity, the ideals, the refusal to alter those principles. They saw football in exactly the same way. And therefore, you know, there was never any question here that building it around Platini and his abilities was what was going to happen. And you know, he even said of Hidalgo, his greatest strength was finding a way to fit three or four number 10s into the same team. And obviously in Platini, you had even beyond that. And you talked earlier about the vision. This is something Platini himself talked about as well. In his physical attributes, he said there were hundreds of players in France who had the same physical attributes as him. There was hundreds who could kick a ball like him, but his secret was the vision. He had the vision. He could see things that others couldn't. But equally, he was so utterly prolific at free kicks that to him, they were as good as a penalty, really. He expected to score every single time. And then when we get to the European Championship in 1984 with the Carré Magique in its final, most glorious guise, the way France played in that tournament. There's a book out there about this competition, which I suggest people have a look at. But this wasn't shown on UK television. Barring a couple of games, and the only France game that was shown was the final, and they weren't actually that brilliant that day. We'd missed all the great bits. But you're absolutely right. For people who know about this team and this generation, a lot of British perspective on it would be based on the 82 and 86 World Cup sides. But in between that, they were even better. And that's the key. This 1984 side, they were at their very, very best. He scored in five games in that European Championship. He scored 9 goals. Now, that in itself sounds incredible. If you think it took, that remained a record for European Championships. And I don't even mean for scoring in one championship. And I think it's still very much the record for that, despite only having 5 games and now they have 7. That was a scoring record for players in all European Championships. It's the only one Platini ever played in. But it took Ronaldo 4 tournaments, I think, to match that total, Cristiano Ronaldo, and 5 to eventually beat it. And he did eventually beat it, but it took him 5 tournaments to do so. And Platini did that in 1. He scored 2 perfect hat-tricks in the group stage, left foot, right foot header. Then an incredibly iconic winner in the remarkable semi-final against Portugal. Last gasp goal at the end of extra time when France had actually a few minutes earlier been on the verge of going out. They just kept going and going and going, and they refused to budge from their principles. They refused to change their ideals. When they went behind, as Jurès commented, he said, "We just reset the machine and went again," and it saw them through. And Platini was key to absolutely everything that happened. The team, I guess, was in full flow by that stage. It was energetic creativity. It wasn't all slow and languid, as much as Platini was able to slow things down, or maybe it's just appeared to be able to slow things down, because people who are playing on another level to everybody else always look like they've got more time and more space, and Platini was very much that. But the fact that the team as a whole could play with this innate understanding, it was almost telepathic. I guess they'd been with each other most of that midfield for 6 or 7 years by this stage. So they knew each other very well and they'd all developed the style together. But, you know, Platini was just that level above them all. And with him, it took them on to what I would see as the greatest European Championship victory, the greatest side to have done it, as you rightly say. As national teams go, this is one of the finest there's ever been. it's a shame that they didn't quite manage a World Cup victory to go alongside it, because that would have probably pushed them further into everybody's consciousness. But their real peak was 1984. And this came right, and again, in the midst of his three Ballon d'Or wins, when he was simply untouchable. He was the best there was.
Yeah, and I think if anyone hasn't seen that team, go out and watch them. And if you haven't read the book, go and get the book and find out all about Euro 84, because it's a fantastic tournament won by an absolutely brilliant team. Without delving into his administrative career for Platini, did he have any sort of major controversies or setbacks that he was kind of involved in his football time? And, you know, there's a lot of success there. You know, Juventus won pretty much everything that you could win under Trapattoni from mid-70s to sort of mid-80s when he leaves. Obviously, Platini's part of that time. Was he involved? You know, was there any bad injuries? Because it looks like when you look at his record, like a lot of these icons, they didn't get a lot of injuries. They played a lot of games. They scored a lot of goals and they kind of won a lot of trophies. Was he kind of similar to a lot of those other players?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And coming through this era where defenders, especially in Italy, took no prisoners, that's quite something, I guess, to come through largely unscathed. In terms of controversies that he's had to overcome, I guess then they're slightly off the pitch in some ways. You know, in the 82 World Cup, one of his squad mates had a dalliance with a Platini's wife, which caused a bit of a stir, as you'd imagine. It was one of the goalkeepers in the squad. But he then didn't get to play anymore. Platini obviously did, and he still played well. But that's a bit of a strange one that happened at that stage. Then I guess there was a little bit of an outcry following the 85 European Cup final, which he'd scored the winning goal in for Juventus. Obviously, this is the Heysel final, 1985. He celebrated scoring his winning penalty. But in his defense, and he's talked about this plenty afterwards, the players had not been told the full extent of what had happened. They obviously knew something bad had happened, but they did not know about deaths. They did not know that many of their fans were not had gone to the game and were now dead. So I guess there's a little bit of a pass on that one, but yeah, that's one of the things he had to deal with. But no, really, it's just a lot of success. But even then, post-playing career, he was quite successful initially as well. He was manager of the French national team from 88 to 92, and okay, they didn't get to the 1990 World Cup, but they qualified for the 92 Euros in magnificent style, unbeaten, and only to flop when they got there. And then he became supremo of the 1998 World Cup. And that was obviously a huge success for France. So yes, at that stage, he was doing very, very well, and the success was just continuing. And then, hey, he ends up as UEFA president. What could possibly go wrong then?
I think that's one of those things where you think, what is his legacy now? I think probably for someone like him, most sort of fans' interactions with Platini as a character, or, you know, in the world of football, is through that kind of administrative lens, especially for fans who, you know, maybe didn't see a lot of him at the time. Do you think that's got in the way a little bit of his playing legacy and kind of what an incredible player he was and how unique he was as a player by being part of sort of the machine, if you like, especially with how that machine has just continued to probably outgrow football in itself, isn't it? And how they sort of view themselves or see themselves. Do you think that's probably a bit of a blot on his CV now?
Yeah. You know, we always have to put in the comments when we talk about Platini, saying Platini the player. And that's a shame, I guess. Does it diminish his abilities? Not in the slightest, but it means it always has to be acknowledged. And that's a bit of a disappointment. And I guess to younger generations, as you rightly say, that's what they would think of first and foremost of Platini, without having seen him play, without having been captivated by that team in the same way that people who witnessed it at the time were. You know, you can go and see it after the fact, of course, but you've always got in your head what he became when, as you do so. And therefore, does he get the full credit for just how good a player he was? Possibly not. And that is a real shame, because he was really one of the very, very best. But yeah, I guess that is the unfortunate truth.
Yeah, definitely. And I think if we could bring, you know, if we bring Platini, the player, into the modern game to maybe erase some of that work that he's done now, I'm sure Eddie Howe and you would have him at Newcastle. You know, he might be able to get in over Anthony Gordon every now and again, maybe in the Carabao Cup. But if you were bringing Platini forward into the modern game, are there actually any comparable players to him who can create like he did and score like he did at such volume? I mean, there probably is somebody out there who's kind of similar in the modern game, but I was struggling to think who had that balance between goal scoring and sort of that creative element.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't think there is. I think, well, and this sounds ludicrous, unless you are talking of the likes of Messi who could do both. I'm not saying Platini was as good as Messi, but I guess that's the kind of comparison, that someone who could be central to everything of their team's play, be creative and score an awful lot. That's what leads me to that. I guess for younger listeners, maybe Jude Bellingham is along those lines in terms of his contributions. It certainly was during the previous season with Real Madrid. But even I don't think he's as creative as Platini either. So again, that's not quite correct, really. And I think to be so incredibly good at those two elements of the game in one player, it's something beyond anybody else, really. It's unprecedented. And I think it's such a shame when we talk about the administration thing that he doesn't get that full credit, because it was something quite incredible. I think in terms of France, we mentioned Zidane earlier, and I guess you could mention Mbappe as the current big star. They've both gone on and achieved huge things. They've both won World Cups for France. And in Zidane's case, a European Championship as well. So technically speaking, internationally, they've both succeeded more, or won more, certainly, than Platini. But who is the greatest French player of all time? It's not either of those two. Younger people might argue that it is, but the vast majority would still say it is Platini. And that is because he could do more than both of them. He could do what either of them could and beyond.
And I think that's where he gets that iconic status in world football, because he could do things that no one else could do. And he did it so well for such a long period of time that actually that iconic status that he gets for being part of that Juventus team, part of that France team, I think that's where his real legacy lies, isn't it? And I think if you were looking to bring him into the modern game, it would be seamless. You know, you would fit into whatever system. I mean, I think he's, like you were saying about Messi, Platini's the kind of player you build your team around, because he can do everything and anything. And I think, I mean, imagine you had a player like that in the modern game. Like you say, it is probably only Messi who was as productive in that kind of thing. And the fact he did it, you mentioned it earlier, the fact he did it in Italian football and Serie A in the 80s, when it was the classic 2 points for a win and about 1.5 goals per game. The fact that he was scoring so many at that time is just phenomenal. I can probably guess where you're going to go with what some of his best performances, but have you got a moment, a Platini moment, a Platini goal, or kind of part of his career where you think that was, you know, that is that the making of an icon, or that really perfect moment?
Yeah, it is the final couple of minutes against Portugal, Euro 84 semi-final, Marseille, stunningly hot, shimmering evening, gorgeous stadium, glorious kits, one of the great international football matches of all time, and incredible drama. He and his team played incredibly well and should have won this game earlier if it wasn't for incredible Portuguese goalkeeping. They just had chance after chance after chance and went so, so close many, many times, but they somehow ended up 2-1 down going into the closing minutes of extra time. There was a late equaliser, but like I say, they just kept going and going and going. Tiganar was the one who created this final winner, but when it fell into the box and fell just right, you would not have wanted it to drop to anyone other than Platini. And to score then, the crackling commentary of John Motson, which was only for highlights, not for live coverage. If you ever see that as a clip, that was purely for a highlights package. That just made it even better, the excited tones of it. But the whole stadium erupted. It was they were in a situation where all the fears were coming back to them of what had happened 2 years before. There, they'd been well ahead and winning a semi-final of a World Cup and couldn't see it through. Their insecurities, again, like I say, France were not a strong or great footballing nation by this point. They had no heritage to fall back on, whereas West Germany did. They're the nation who always succeeded. They always saw it through, as they then did against France in 82. They look around at Italy as well and see a more successful nation. They could look to Spain and see a more successful nation, even at that stage. They could look to England and see a more successful nation. As odd as that may sound now, that was the truth then. And yet they managed to put aside all those fears. They were in extra time. They were in danger of penalties and all going horribly wrong again. And yet up steps Platini at the right moment, scores the goal, and then the rest is history. And to me, that European Championship victory was about as perfect a tournament victory as it can get. It's a rare case of the right team, the best team, the most beautiful team actually walking off with the trophy. And that was Platini at his best.
And I think on that moment, I think we need to come to a close and give everybody permission to go back and listen to John Motson's comment. Me and Aidan will not be trying to recreate that on this podcast, I'm afraid. Please do go and find that highlight, though, and do see that iconic commentary from John Motson. Aidan's been great talking about a second icon with you and Michel Platini. Thank you again to everyone for listening to this icon series so far. We have gone through so many brilliant ones, but this one was right up there. We'll see you next time on These Football Times podcast.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists, and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.